So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our morning speaker, Liz. Liz and I have attended our meeting together for quite a long time. I haven't been as regular lately as I wanted to be, but Liz is also one of our intergroup officers for Central Jersey Intergroup. So I don't know if this works. If it doesn't, we need one. I'll get you another. Do you want a chair?
I might just sit over there.
Perfect. Thank you. Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I see lots of familiar faces and also lots of unfamiliar faces, so really, really glad to be here. Would you all join me in saying the seventh step prayer together as I start? My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Thank you. I just wanted to say that as I start, because I hope that as I speak this morning, that it won't be me that you're hearing so much as you hear God saying something through me for you. And I first just want to thank you all for being here, and I'm not sure if she's in here right now, but I did want to thank Margaret for inviting me to speak this morning, because just really feels like an honor to me to be able to do this. And so I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about this morning. And so I know when we share, we usually try to focus on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so I was trying to think, what is the best way that I could contrast what my life was like before and what it's like now? And so as I was thinking about it, I boiled it down to three major points, and I hope I can get those across this morning. And those are: what did I worship, what did I put my faith in, and who did I serve? So that's what I want to talk to you about this morning, and I'll try to share that from my own experience and share some things with you from the big book about, you know, what our AA founders had to say about that. So I want to start with, what did I worship? And so what I worshiped before coming to OA and finding recovery were a few things. One of them was food, success, my own perfection, and to an extent, men. So I want to read you something from the big book. It's on page 54 in the chapter, We Agnostics. It says, "We found too that we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw at last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else." So when I say worship, what I mean is, what do I devote my mental faculties to? What do I focus on? What do I turn my heart to? And before coming to recovery, the answer to that question, number one, was food. So what did that look like for me? Actually, my journey with food really started with a period of restriction, and so I had been on very restrictive diets, even though I was thin, around the time I was 14, and lost really too much weight. But my family intervened at the time and asked me to go to therapists, and so With that, the therapist had encouraged me to eat all kinds of junk food, whatever it was that I needed to put a healthy amount of weight back on. And what ended up happening was that I became addicted to those foods that I was eating to, you know, reverse my anorexia, so to speak. And from that point on, food really became the central focus of my life. There wasn't a day that went by that I wasn't struggling with it, either, you know, eating too much of it or constantly obsessing about eating the right amount of it, what kind of it. You know, I went on all different kinds of diets, from low carb, low calorie, low fat. And, you know, as time progressed, I became less and less able to adhere to those diets because the food was just gaining more and more control in my life. And it was really all consuming for me, just what preoccupied my thoughts for the better part of any day. You know, in high school, I would be at school just waiting for the next meal to come, sneaking food in the bathroom stalls, you know, stopping at the vending machines. And when I would come home from school, it was just, you know, hours of binging before I would get started on my homework or any other responsibilities. And then I'd end up staying up until late hours of the night trying to catch up on everything that had gotten postponed because I had spent the entire evening eating. And then I would wake up early in the morning to finish the things that I hadn't finished and start my diet bright and early. And, you know, really almost every day it was a new diet or a plan for how today I was going to beat the food. And it never ceases to amaze me how much I really believed that today was going to be the day. And, you know, like I've heard said in here before, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, and that's exactly what I did. So I think it's safe to say that I worshipped food. I also worship success, my own perfection. And so what do I mean by that? I mean that my life was completely oriented towards myself and what I wanted to get and how I wanted to get ahead, whether it was trying to be the perfect student or the perfect little volunteer or whatever it might be. But it was, you know, there was no outward focus to it at all. It was really for my own purposes of getting ahead. And so, success. And I think I could also say that I worshipped other people, including the opposite sex. I was very, very desperate for attention. After a death in my family in high school, I got a lot of attention. And when that attention went away, I started turning to the food all the more. Because I was just so hungry for someone to pay attention to me, and one of the ways that I tried to do that was by, you know, seeking after relationships, often relationships that weren't healthy for me, and this was all mingled together with the dieting and feeling that I wasn't attractive and that I had to use my words or wit or whatever it might be to try to attract people to myself because, you know, clearly I didn't think they would be attracted to me physically. And, you know, forget about any true qualities of myself because I didn't think anyone would like that, so I had to make up, you know, this funny personality or whatever it might be in order to feel like anyone wanted to pay attention to me. So that's what I want to say so far about worship and how it looked in my life in the past. So what about what I put my faith in? Although I was raised in a Christian household, I think really what I put my faith in most of the time was myself, my own ideas, my own ingenuity, my own willpower, or what I thought I had in those areas. I think this especially came out with the food because I really thought that I was going to be able to come up with this brilliant diet. You know, the things that I did to try to control the food, you know, I can laugh at them today, but, you know, I remember a time that I went to the supermarket to get a pacifier, an infant's pacifier, because I thought if I just have something in my mouth, then I won't be able to put the food in it. Of course, I never used it, but just a crazy, crazy idea. And so that was just an example of me having faith in my own ingenuity, and I put my faith in that in terms of how I ran my life too, because I thought that if I could just be smart enough or work hard enough or prove myself enough, then I would be able to get ahead. And I'm not sure it ever occurred to me to turn to God for those sorts of things. And that kind of lifestyle of willpower and self-propulsion is just exhausting, because I don't have the strength to run my own life. So I want to read you something from the big book that talks about faith also. It says, on page 53 to 54, without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, abjectly faithful to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. So, as I said, I put my faith in myself and my own ideas. I also put my faith in other people. And as we all know, other people are human and not perfect either. And what I put my faith in those people for was fulfillment, attention, having my wants or cravings satisfied. And that too was a very unfulfilling way to live, because especially the kind of people that I chose to associate with a lot of the time were very unhealthy and very incapable of meeting any of those wants or needs in a way that would be good for me. And this just led to a further cycle of disappointment and just one more reason to turn to the food, because I would get excited about a relationship or something and go on a diet to try to keep this person, and then it would just all come crashing down on my head as, you know, either I broke the diet or, you know, I started opening up to them about my struggle with food and they didn't want anything to do with that. And I can look back on it now and say that, you know, I think God was really protecting me from getting into perhaps a more permanent relationship with someone that would have been really destructive for me. But at the time, it was very frustrating and really led to a lot of problems with the food. I also put my faith in my own success, just this mentality that everything will be okay when, you know, everything will be okay when I graduate from college or I get this this thing that I want, or when I get to my goal weight, or if my parents would just change, or whatever it might be, everything will be okay when. And that mentality led to so many disappointments, because you know, every time, regardless of whether I reached the goal or not, if I didn't reach the goal, well, then everything wasn't going to be okay. And if I did reach the goal, then that goal was just replaced with a new, everything will be okay when. So putting my faith in those things didn't get me anywhere either. And I think that I ate over a lot of disappointments in that area too. So the third thing I wanted to talk about is, whom did I serve? So I've told you about what did I worship, what did I put my faith in, and lastly, whom did I serve? I think the number one person that I served was myself, and I did that primarily with food, because food was what I used for the perceived unmet needs in my life, and I always put myself first where food was concerned. You know, it didn't matter if my parents had asked me to do something, a friend was counting on me to do something. Food came first. And it didn't matter if, you know, it just reminds me of the story. I can't remember if it was, I don't think it was Bill's story. One of the stories described early in the big book about someone who, you know, he knew he had some big commitment or some big obligation coming up, and it always seemed that he got himself into a bender with the alcohol right at the precisely wrong moment. And that's how it was with me and food. You know, if I had an obligation coming up, if I had a commitment, a test, you name it, those seemed to always be the times when the food was most a struggle for me, and thus when I was most prone to serve myself and forget about everyone else that I might have made a commitment to, or something like that. I also served my projections. What I mean by that is I did whatever I thought people wanted me to, what I perceived they would expect from me. And so that could take various forms. Meaning, you know, if I thought you wanted me to be funny, I would be funny. If I thought you wanted me to be crass, I would be crass. And there was just no integrity in it at all. And lastly, I think I served anyone that I thought I needed to manipulate to get ahead. Because, you know, it's a hard call whether my number one character defect is pride or control. They're probably related, but if we talk about control, I thought I was the expert at it, because, you know, I could just say what I thought you wanted me to say, and you would like me, and I would get ahead. So. That's what it was like. And this went on from the time I was 14 until I came into OA in 2005, at which point I was 19, I guess. And when I came to OA, I had just finished my first year of college, and I had really damaged some relationships with what I did with food my first year of college. I had been stealing food from my roommate, and all the while accusing her of an eating disorder, and that led to a big falling out with her, and she really still hasn't talked to me to this day, although I've attempted to make amends to her. But I was at my bottom, and so I looked up compulsive overeater on the internet and was led to OA. And when I came to OA, it really took me a long time to get any kind of back-to-back abstinence together. It was really hard for me to accept the idea that I had to abstain from certain foods, because we live in a culture that says, don't deprive yourself, don't restrict yourself, that'll just lead you to go over the edge. And I believed that. You know, I went to all the diets that told you that. And so it really took a long time and just trying things that people suggested to me to realize that if I put sugar or flour in my body, I was setting myself up to be powerless over what I did for the rest of the day or week or however long it took for that to work itself out of my system. And I really didn't want to hear that because, of course, I was in love with those foods. But eventually I was willing to put them down, and what really made a difference in my recovery was beginning to work through the 12 steps from the Big Book with a sponsor. I had tried doing the OA step book on my own. I think many of us can attest to the fact that doing it on our own doesn't work. And I really believe that the key to the recovery comes from what we learn and what we find in those 12 steps. So although after I got my initial period of abstinence, I struggled with relapse many times. And I'm very grateful to be out of relapse at this point and to be in recovery. So I want to tell you about what my life is like today and maybe give you some contrast about who I worship, who I put my faith in, and who I serve. So let me start off all of this by saying I do not do this perfectly. And as I was thinking about this talk, I realized how prideful I could be in talking about this because by the grace of God today, I know these things. I know them in my mind, but the average moment or the average day, they might not extend from my mind to my heart. And I need to be honest about that because I don't have it all together. But that being said, today I worship God, and He is the focus of what I do, or what I hope to be the focus of what I do. So today when I wake up in the morning, instead of having a full belly and a foggy head from what I had done with food the previous night, I can wake up and say a prayer to God, just asking Him to help me today. My sponsor has recently convinced me to take the On Awakening passage from the Big Book more seriously, and I found that very helpful, just to ask that God would direct my thinking, that He would divorce it from self-pity and dishonest and self-seeking motives, because it really is true that bad motives are what ran my life before I decided to turn my will and my life over to God. And just to ask Him that I'd be able to pause throughout the day when I'm agitated and doubtful and indecisive, and just ask Him for the right thought or action, and trust that if I ask for His will to be done, that I can find peace in that. So when I wake up in the morning, today my husband and I do a Bible study together, and that's something I really look forward to. I'm so grateful to have that in my life. First of all, to have a husband in my life, to have a man who's seeking after God and who loves God and wants to serve Him, and so having that and just being able to look forward to that time in God's Word together is really a great way to start my day. I do struggle to make time for prayer in the morning, and that's something I'm actively talking to my sponsor about and working with her about, because I have a hard time sitting still. That's still a character defect that I really struggle with, just being able to stop going, stop running, and just sit and close my eyes and pray and meditate and just be with God. Although throughout the day I do often say prayers, just asking God for help in whatever agitation or situation I might find myself in, I still struggle quite a bit with just sitting still for a devoted time of prayer. But I'm working on it. You know, I said that I worship God today, and I just have to tell you that I still do struggle with worshiping other things. Some things that I really think idolize in my life are rest. I get very anxious if I'm tired or I think I'm not going to get enough sleep. And lately it seems like money has been taking a lot of focus of my thoughts. And I'm very grateful to have a sponsor who's willing to talk to me about these things and try to help me through them in a healthy and balanced way. Because, you know, if I start turning to other compulsions or other things that I'm trying to control aside from the food, then my recovery is not going to be as rich as it could be. And I had said before that I worship success, and I think, you know, today the principle that I strive to remember, although imperfectly, is that when I work today, God is my employer. And so whatever success or failure He chooses to bring into my life, I can trust that it's for my good and for His glory. So secondly, what do I put my faith in today? Again, what I strive to keep the answer to that question is God. And I still struggle with the future thinking mentality that everything will be okay when this happens. Although food is not running my life nearly as much as it used to. And I can still get into a space sometimes when I'm really looking forward to that next meal, and you know, I need to remind myself that, you know, no one ever died between lunch and dinner. I mean, I know that's not 100% true, but no one ever starved to death between lunch and dinner, hypothetically. And, you know, so I need to get rid of this idea that everything's going to be okay as long as I get that next meal. And I do still struggle with putting faith in myself. Again, this is this 12-step process is a lifelong process, and so I am not free of my character defects and sins. But today I have a process that I can go through when I fail. When I put my faith in other things, I can work on step 5 and confess that to God and myself and another person. In step 7, I can ask God to remove that from me. And in step 10, I can inventory it and write about it and keep tabs on it, even on a daily basis if I need to. And lastly, whom do I serve today? And although I still struggle with serving myself many times, I strive to serve God and others today, and to remember that, you know, it's not about being first. You know, it's I can put God first and trust that if I do that, He will take care of me. That I don't need to put my selfish interests first, because God's interest will be good for me. And as far as serving others, I do sponsor in a way. Phone calls is an area that I've struggled with a bit, although I'm trying to get more serious about returning phone calls in a timely manner. And I was really struck. I had traveled to New Zealand in January, and I had found some contact numbers for OA people there, and I was so impressed. I think almost every time I made a phone call, the person on the other end answered. And, you know, I know, at least for myself, you know, how many times do I think, you know, oh, I can call them back later. And I was just really moved by the spirit of service that I saw, that people were willing to stop what they were doing and pick up the phone and help me. And I remember the times when I was struggling in OA and the times I was in relapse, how much that meant to me. So I've been trying to be more mindful of that. I still do struggle with thinking about what other people think of me and wanting to control them. But I'm very grateful today to have the awareness of that and to be able to work through it, to not have to work through it on my own, to have a sponsor who's guiding me, to have God who's giving me direction in my life. So I told you about my morning routine a little bit, but as I go throughout the day, I have been trying to pause and just recognize when I'm feeling agitated, because if I don't address those feelings of agitation and doubt when they come up, I can very easily turn to other compulsions. I've shared at many meetings that another compulsion that I've struggled with is skin picking, pimple popping, and you know, for me, it's no joke. It really has sort of evolved into another compulsion and an addiction for me. So what's really been helping me is stopping when I'm agitated and doubtful and not just brushing it aside, saying, I'll be okay, let's move on with the day, but just recognizing it and turning to God and asking Him for help, because that was what helped me when I was struggling with the food, just not minimizing what I was thinking or feeling and just telling myself, oh, I'll get over it, you know, but stopping and writing about it and praying about it, sharing about it. And I do weigh and measure my food today. My food plan comes from a nutritionist, and it's not restricting me in any of the major food groups, although I do abstain from sugar and flour. And I commit that food plan every day to my sponsor. I try to write about my feelings, and a lot of times that can take on something looking like a 10th step, because usually my feelings are about the things that I've done wrong, and or things that I perceive people have done to me. But I don't put myself in too tight of a box in terms of trying to do this perfectly formal 10th step inventory, because that was overwhelming to me to the point that I just wasn't doing it. So today I need to say, you know, I'm going to do what I'm willing to do, and if my writing doesn't look like a perfect little four column thing, that's okay. And so I guess that's what I wanted to share today, just to tell you that from a life where I worshipped and put my faith in and served food and myself and what other people thought, today, although imperfectly, by the grace of God, and there's so much help that I've received in this program, I'm able to worship and put my faith in God and serve Him and others. And why do I say this? What does this have to do with food? What this has to do with food is that I found that the reason I was eating so much and struggling so much was that when I was worshiping and putting my faith in and serving myself and all those other things, I wasn't doing what I was made to do. And I was filled with feelings of unfulfillment and remorse and guilt. And because I was not feeling filled, I filled myself with food. And so I can tell you from the heart today that serving God and worshiping Him and putting my faith in Him and serving others is fulfilling and satisfying to the degree that I don't need food today to satisfy those things, because God is satisfying me. And when I don't turn to Him, I can return to Him, and He'll take me back. So that's what I wanted to share with you today. And thank you so much for being here and giving me this chance to speak.
Thanks very much to Liz. Like to refresh everyone's understanding of the program at 10:30, which is in just about 12 minutes. We're in this room. We're going to go through the ninth tool of recovery and action plan. And as I said, we'll be using some handouts from Lifeline magazine to help that session. Down the hall, up the ramp on the right side in the large room, there's a sponsorship Together We Can Recovery Part A workshop, and that's presented by the Edison Sunday Evening Meeting. Classroom A, The Return of Sanity, Emotional Abstinence, that's going to be down the hall again past the large room. And Classroom B is meditation. And please, if you're going to go there, go in, get settled in a small classroom, get your seat, and get comfortable. Thank you.
Thank you.
You did great.
Thank you.